1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 1 to chapter 6, verse 2. Does anyone know who this picture is of? Anyone know him? Well, this is William Shawcross, and he is the chief executive of the Charities Commission, the chairman of the Charities Commission. And recently, he spoke out in a press article. He said that 30 of the biggest charities, their bosses got paid over £100,000 a year. And William Shawcross was speaking out saying, these charities are going to fall into disrepute if they're not careful. They can't afford to be paying this kind of money to people and still look respectable. Well, the church in Ephesus, in our passage today, it was trying to be charitable, but its relationships with each other were causing it to fall into disrepute, and therefore giving the good news about Jesus a bad name. Paul, writing this letter to the younger leader of the church, Timothy, wants there to be no way that people can slander the gospel through the behaviour of the church. He wants the church to display the gospel through godly behaviour, so that no one may be left open to blame. Following on from last week's passage, where Paul tells us he wants people to know how to conduct themselves in the church, this week begins, and it covers our relationships with other people in the church. How are we to treat one another so that the good news of Jesus is displayed for people to see? He calls the church to act like a family. Let's read verses 1 and 2. Do not rebuke an old man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity. Godliness, displaying what God is like through the way that we behave, is observed in ordinary relationships with one another when we treat each other with honour, as a family should. So Paul gives three examples of where the church is falling short and what it would look like to live out family relationships in those situations. First of all, widows. But as we know already, there were problems in the church in Ephesus. Instead of displaying the gospel, they were causing it to be a laughingstock. In verses 3 to 16, it's clear that one area that they thought they were doing a good job was their mercy ministry to widows. Widows in the first century got a particularly rough time. There were no pension schemes, no benefits, no care homes, no protection when their husbands died. But there were a whole host of problems with the way that the church in Ephesus was trying to help the widows. In verses 4 to 8, we can see that the fact that the church was helping widows had resulted in their actual families not doing their job. Throughout the Bible, we see that families are important and that children should honour their parents. So the fact that some were taking no responsibility for caring for their older, widowed relatives actually did more damage to the gospel than it did good. Again, Paul says in verse 5 that there are widows who are truly in need. They put their hope in God and pray night and day for God's help. But there were widows who, in fact, were not needy and were taking advantage of the church. They were, as a result, dead even while they were alive. Verse 6. They were living in contradiction of the gospel. In verses 11 to 13, we see that this was shown in their promiscuity, their breaking of promises, their idle behaviour, and their gossiping and nonsense talk. The people in Ephesus would have been able to look at these widows and see that the church was funding this lifestyle. Instead of displaying the gospel through their relationships, some were taking advantage of others in the church, and the gospel was falling into disrepute. The The reputation of the gospel in our community is directly linked to the reputation of our church. The way that we relate to each other, whether we take advantage of each other like these ladies in Ephesus were doing, affects what people think of Jesus. Can we be trusted? Is our message supported by our actions? And the result of their bad reputation was that some had turned to Satan, verse 15. The church was burdened, verse 16, and they weren't helping those who were really in need. In response, Paul shows how, as a family, they could have good gospel-focused relationships and therefore display the good news of Jesus. Give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need, verse 3. Families should look after their own, not abandon them. It shows faith in practice, verse 4, when you do, and this is pleasing to God. Have a widow list, by all means, Paul says. Look after those really in need. And those not on the list, well, Paul encourages them to marry and have families, as opposed to going from house to house and being idle gossips. The intentions behind the widow list appear to have been good. The problem was that they didn't see the link between their relationships and the fruitfulness of their ministry. Bad relationships in the church had caused a bad reputation for the gospel. We demonstrate godly living by honouring one another as a family, displaying godly living to those around us. Well, next, Paul moves on to our relationships with elders. Now, Liverpool are on the verge of winning their first title in a number of years, 24 years. Since I was born, actually, the year after I was born was the last time they won it. And Liverpool as a club can pride themselves on the great history of good managers. They've given them plenty of time. They've respected their managers. However, recently this has not been the case so much. Multiple managers have been hired and fired without too much of a chance to prove themselves. One thinks of poor old Roy Hodgson, especially. Part of the problem in Ephesus appears to have been that they treated their elders, literally their older man, the same word is used in verse 1. They treated them like the fans have treated those managers. They've complained and criticized them freely with no respect for their experience. But at the same time, some of the leaders have been allowed to stay, despite their horrendous behavior. A bit like Newcastle's manager being allowed to stay despite headbutting a player last week. Those elders who were working hard, like an ox treading out the grain, it's not a glamorous picture of the role of Bible ministry, really. They were actually worth double honour. Don't allow them to be kicked out too quick just because one person speaks badly of them. Treat older men as you would a father. Now, when you're driving on the road, if an ambulance goes past you, it's funny, isn't it? Sometimes you hear the noise first, but sometimes the ambulance seems to go past and then the noise gives you a fright. It gives you a fright as it goes past because you didn't see it until the moment it went by. Sometimes the noise comes after, trailing behind. Well, so are the bad deeds of the leaders are described. Sometimes they will be obvious. Sometimes they won't be clear till later, but they will be seen. But the same is true of good deeds. They might follow later, but they will be seen. Treat elders as fathers. Honor the ones whose good deeds become apparent. Don't treat them like football managers, rebuking them and criticizing them and getting rid of them, or glazing over their terrible actions in the name of success. Act like a family. We demonstrate godly living by honouring one another as a family, displaying godly living to those around us. Well, finally, Paul moves to the subject of slaves. Now, when I used to work in Cotswold in an outdoors shop down in Bournemouth, we had rather a culture of pushing the boundaries. If we were given an hour for lunch, we'd take an hour and 5 minutes. It would stretch to maybe an hour and 10 minutes. The day would go a bit quicker if we stay clear of the boss and avoid his orders. Well, verses 1 and 2 of chapter 6 act as a rebuke to that kind of behaviour. All who are under the yoke of slavery should consider their masters worthy of full respect, so that God's name and our teaching may not be slandered. Those who have believing masters are not to show less respect for them because they are brothers. Instead, they are to serve them even better, because those who benefit from their service are believers and dear to them. These are the things you are to teach and urge on them. It appears that the slaves in the church, not the kind of slaves we think of from the Atlantic slave trade, which was entirely disgraceful, but slaves who were treated mostly fairly and were given humane jobs, those slaves had begun to treat their masters with disrespect because of their newfound faith. This was causing God's name and the gospel to be slandered. Instead, they should consider them worthy of respect, so that their hard work might show that the gospel is true. They were freed by Jesus to serve. Those with masters who were Christians should serve even better. Why? Well, because their masters are devoted to the welfare of their slaves. The relationship that Paul envisages between these two groups, one presumably poor and one quite rich, was that of brothers. Treat younger men as brothers, chapter 5, verse 1. One excellent demonstration of the gospel: if slaves are willing to serve their masters by working hard, and masters are willing to look out for their workers. What an excellent demonstration of the gospel if Christian men and women are willing to work hard and serve their bosses no matter what they are like. One excellent demonstration of the gospel if Christian bosses are willing to look after their employees and devote themselves to their welfare. We demonstrate godly living by honouring one another as a family, displaying godly living to those around us. So what do we make of all this? Paul sets out family relationships as the key to how to relate to one another in the church. The reputation of the gospel in our community is directly linked to the reputation of our church. When people look at this church, what do they see? We talk a lot about family here. And in our time, Amy and I have been really blessed by the love and support we've received from our church family. But so often it's tempting to think of our church family in strangely distant and remote terms. There when we need them. Distant enough that we don't really have to deal with their problems. When we are at church, we put up the image of being a nice, happy family, but really it's all fake. Any attempt at being fake by this church will be spotted a mile off by the people of this estate, and the gospel will become a laughingstock rather than the wonderful news that it is. So can I encourage all of us to think about the ways that we interact with one another? Couples, do we allow others access to our lives? Are we willing to spend our free time with others from the church? Those with kids, are you willing to let others see that they aren't perfect and allow them a role in bringing up your children? Young people, do we look after the old people? Do we put up a fake image of a family, or do we get on and live it out? You might just be sat there this morning and you might be thinking that this is all a big hoax. Your experience of family might not be a particularly great one, or your experience of church family might be that it feels fake. Maybe you've been hurt by relationships in the church. All this talk of family, it's a nice idea, but it's just a middle class ideal, isn't it? Well, the short answer is no. Jesus is approached in Matthew 12 by his disciples who say his mother and brothers want to see him. Instead of going at once, he stops, points, and replies to those around them, who is my brother? And who are my who is my mother? And who are my brothers? Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. Jesus invites us into his family. There is nothing fake about that. That is great for all of us. But for those who might not have had a very good experience of family, or for whom your family is a painful thing to think about, this is the best news. Jesus died for you and for me so that we might be in his family. He gave his life freely, submitting to his Father and dying on a cross, so that all of us, including those who don't have families to talk of or who come from dysfunctional families, can have life and be in his family. The other week I said that 54.8% of families on this estate are lone parent families. That's more than double the national average. I said it a few weeks ago and I'll say it again. That's not a condemnation of single parents or anything like that. One in seven people on this estate are over 65. Many of those people will have families, but some of them will be lonely and won't have a family. This is a challenge to us, Beechwood Chapel. Are we willing to really be a family? Are we willing to be a family to the familyless? Whatever your family background, Jesus calls us to be in his family of imperfect people, loved perfectly by our God. We demonstrate godly living by honouring one another as a family, displaying godly living to those around us.